You know, normally around this time of year, hockey is pretty quiet, but not so much, with headlines seemingly coming out on the hour, if not half hour. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart. Elliot Friedman stops by here in a couple of moments. Jason York from the NHL on Sportsnet towards the bottom of the hour will get on the Ottawa Senators page. Meanwhile, Stewie, good afternoon. And boy, I don't know where we can jump in here. There's a ton. We'll start off talking with Elliot, probably about the Shea Weber situation with the ankle and the foot injuries. He won't be protected in the Seattle expansion draft, etc. There's news about Darcy Kemper being courted by both the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Colorado Avalanche. That coming from Frank Saravelli at Daily Faceoff. There's the Florida Panthers buying out Keith Yandel. There's a Gabriel Landeskog situation. Does he end up going to market? And if so, who are the aggressive pursuers? We all expect St. Louis to top that list. I know the two sides are fairly substantially apart. Where do you feel like beginning, Stewie? There's no shortage of headlines to peek at today. What's got your interest?
Well, I'm going to check. I checked my Twitter mentions yesterday, and with Nick Alberga, we forgot to mention Pekka Rinne retiring, and I'm surprised that hasn't been a bigger story long throughout the league. And he was a great goaltender, one of the best goaltenders I've ever played against. I never had the pleasure of scoring on him, but I had a couple opportunities. Hall of Famer, I say yes. So I'd like to start off with Pekka Rinne. I'll just mention it quickly, but how about just all these buyouts that are going on right now too? And, you know, teams are figuring out how are they going to get out of this flat cap system, and they're going to go the buyout route. It's going to cause them some problems down the line. But again, right now they got to find ways to free up some money and protect some guys with this upcoming expansion draft. So, but I'm surprised some of these veteran guys with a lot of social equity amongst the NHL, they're on the outs.
And Keith Yandel is the most recent one. And Yandel, as you'll recall, was, you know, poised to be healthy scratch. The Iron Man streak was going to come to an end. This was the beginning of last season, and everybody, including teammates, perhaps Stewie most notably teammates, rallied around Keith Yandel. And we can all remember watching that first game. It was a Sunday evening. Yandel gets introduced. The boys go crazy. Yandel scores a goal. They go even crazier. Excuse me, was a great way for the Panthers to start the season. They rode it to an excellent season, made the playoffs, etc. And now at the end of it, Keith Yandel today bought out by the Florida Panthers. That's one of the things we're going to get into here with Freej. But your thoughts on Shea Weber? And it doesn't look good health-wise. It doesn't look good for the thought of him playing next season. Some would even say for him playing at all, a significant injury to his foot and to his ankle, has been playing through it. I can only imagine what type of pain Shea Weber has gone through. I know you're not surprised by it. Like, I know you're not surprised that Weber is playing through stuff that, you know, would keep us in bed, let alone getting out of bed and putting on hockey equipment and playing an NHL game. What are your thoughts on Shea Weber right now?
Well, I think we now know why he was probably very, you know, beside himself and upset after they lost the Stanley Cup on the bench, visibly upset, because he knew that could potentially be his last game in the National Hockey League. So I'm surprised we didn't catch that. You know, but the list of injuries have been very, very long, and he's had a lot of hard miles on those games, 1,000 games in the league. And, you know, he's one of those guys, blocks shots, plays a heavy game every single shift. He does not take a shift off. And just his pain threshold is probably the best of all time. We were talking about this last year when, you know, there was potentially talk that his season would be done. And he came back, mysteriously came back and played well. So, you know, as an ex-player, it's very, very tough to play injured. And, you know, we've had Berkey on the show mention that, you know, there's only two days in the season that you're healthy. One day, actually, and that's the beginning of training camp. So great career if it's the end. I don't think it's going to be the end, because he's one of those guys, he wants to go out on his terms. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him back, but he needs a year off to rest, because there's been a lot of hard miles on that body for sure.
Yeah, there really is. And from a player's point of view too, like everyone has the same story about Shea Weber, all about, and I know, you know, the leadership story is, you know, perhaps overplayed when it comes to certain players, but everybody has the exact same story about Shea Weber, whether they've played with him internationally, whether they played with him in the NHL, whether they've just casually bumped into him, whether he's been at PA events, like whatever it is, like the story is consistent about Shea Weber. Like, the point that I'm trying to make is, like, there's nothing mysterious about Shea Weber. What you see is what you get, and that is an honest hockey game every time he's on the ice. He's going to try to hurt you with either a body check, or he's going to try to score, usually with a slap shot. There's nothing, you know, subtle about the game. There's no mystique about Shea Weber. Everything he does is big and strong and powerful. And Stewie, I'm sure you're the same way. Everybody tells the same story about him. Everybody.
Absolutely. And I played World Juniors with them, and we had more talented defensemen, and, you know, Seabrook, and we had Phaneuf, and, you know, even Sean Bell was probably ahead of him at the depth chart at the time too. But he was probably one of our most reliable defensemen because he just played the game the right way. And he's probably one of the few players in today's NHL that can play in any era. And I don't remember seeing him get beat up, but he's one of those guys where he's more predator than prey out there too. So what I like about it, he's not the most talented, but he just does those little details right. And, you know, people were surprised when he maybe got the C in Montreal, but he is the ultimate leader, and the respect that he has amongst his peers is probably, you know, second to none in the league, because it's one thing for one guy's to hoot and hollering and talking about the right things to do. He does it every single shift, and he's one of those guys you pull up your bootstraps because you respect him that much. So is he a Hall of Famer? Do we have that conversation? I'm not too sure. Maybe a little bit too premature, but he's definitely one of the great leaders of the National Hockey League.
How many players, Stewie, have you ever seen shoot the puck through the net?
I almost died because of Shea Weber, Ed. We were playing in Nashville, and he took a slap shot. I don't know what he was doing. I don't know if he was trying to ice it, but he cleared the puck from his, like, hash mark. And I was skating through the neutral zone, and it just whacked me in the face. But somehow it hit a rut, and it smacked me flat. So I had a puck mark on my face, probably for a big welt, probably for about a week. But if that would have hit me on its end, I would have had a broken orbital bone. I probably would have had a broken jaw, broken face. And just him, just, you know, you're afraid of that shot. When guys wind up, you do the old flamingo. And it's not because you're chicken. It's because it's just a natural reaction. His shots take a bite out of you. And he's the only one I could compare his shot to is probably Big Buff, where I was afraid to get in that lane. So he's one of those guys. He's got a rocket, and it's definitely tough to get in front of.
Let's get Elliot on. Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts on Hockey Night in Canada. I can recall when he was drafted, when he made it to the NHL, Friege, the line about Shea Weber was, he can shoot like McInnes and he can hit like Stevens. And that's a lot of expectation to put on a young hockey player who's just starting his career. But now that we all have the question marks about the future of Shea Weber, it's kind of true, isn't it?
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, the guy delivered everything you could ever really want, right? You know, like Nashville, he did everything you could have hoped. Montreal, he came in a really tough situation. Remember how all those a lot of those fans hated that deal? And he delivered, no question about it. Very broad shoulders, and he could handle a lot, and he dished out a lot, Jeff, but unfortunately, yeah, it looks like that body's breaking down a little bit.
And remarkable, too, when you consider how long he played with these injuries. Like, we shouldn't be surprised, and I know that there's a parallel conversation that rides next to anyone that plays injured as long as Shea Weber has, which is, you know, at what point does bravery bleed into foolishness? And that is always a sidebar story with playing through injuries. Hang on. Nah. I mean, it is there. And, like, that story does exist.
That's, no, that, you know that what, Jeff? Here's the thing I look at. Right, here's beside. The thing. No. I would like to just say this, because, like, I only put the same I only judge other people the way I judge myself, right? And, like, I'm an adult. I know when I'm, like, I make the judgments on what I put my body through. If there's something that's meaningful to me that I'm going to run through a wall for it, I'm going to do it. And if there's something that's not meaningful to me that I'm not going to run a wall for through it, I'm not going to do it. And I'm not letting anybody else make those decisions for me. So if Shea Weber decides that the competition in hockey is worth it for him, who am I to judge that?
All I'm saying, Friege, is there is a conversation around the glorification of injuries. that runs through this sport and runs through football and runs through MMA and runs through boxing and runs through any contact / violent sport. That wasn't my point about Shea Weber. I'm just saying that there is a sidebar story that runs through all of these things. And as far as Shea Weber goes, if that's a decision that Shea Weber wants to make, I got no problem with it. That's a decision that Anthony Stewart wants to make with his career. I got zero problem with it. All of my only point is I think it's remarkable. Like, I know the sidebar conversation runs through, like, remember when Ian LaPierre threw his face in front of that Paul Martin shot in the Philadelphia New Jersey series? Half of us were saying, wow, that's brave, and the other half were saying, wow, that's really dumb. And in one sense, both were right. But at the same time, I think if Weber's going to make that decision, that is something that, from my chair, I don't look at it and say, wow, this is something we should look down our noses at all. This is something I think that more than anything else should be applauded. His decision, his body, his choice, his injuries.
I respect people. Like, I don't, but I don't also think that people who say, who don't make the same choices are any less. You make the choice you feel is right for yourself. I don't have a problem with people who say, I'm not doing that. Hey, that's your choice. But I also don't like people who judge what other people kind of put themselves through sometimes. You know, I think everybody makes their own decisions.
To sum this up is Elliot's basically saying Dave's a killer and Jeff's saying Dave's a mess is basically
this. I'm saying Dave should make his I said until somebody comes in there and says you really shouldn't be doing this, someone, you know, then you shouldn't, like, whether it's a doctor, whether it's a partner, whether it's a family member, you know, it's, if someone says to you honestly and from the right place, you shouldn't. And look, Weber has 5 more years under contract and we'll figure out where this all goes, Anthony. But and some level, he is saying enough's enough.
Yeah. So would you be able to sum up, you know, in a nutshell, what some of these ramifications would be if he does decide to retire this year or the next?
Well, basically, Anthony, if he retired now, Nashville would have a $4.9 million cap hit for the next 5 seasons, taken out of their cap. If Montreal would have a little over half a million, I think it's $543,000 for the next 5 seasons if he retired.
Why would he retire, though? Why not just go on LTIR?
I'm just saying, Jeff, that if he did retire. Now, the LTIR issue, that's the issue. The league is right now ruling on this. And at this point in time, the league has not given approval for Weber to go like on permanent LTIR. So I think that's kind of what we're wrangling here. You know, there have been lots of guys, like Nathan Horton did it, David Clarkson did it, Chris Pronger did it. I don't know what's different in this particular case than any of those cases. The league is not commenting, but at this particular point in time, as I wrote that last night and as I knew this morning, there wasn't a similar approval. So until that's all sorted out, that's kind of where we are right now.
The reason we bring this up, just to get our listeners caught up here, is this is this is the quote-unquote backdiving deal. So those last remaining years carry with them a $1 million salary that was signed originally to keep the salary cap hit lower than it would be. And this is, like, these are still the fumes of a CBA, you know, that, well, essentially two, that from a bargaining agreement that's 2 CBAs ago. And that is sort of what's in question here. I know the league didn't like the backdiving deals to begin with. They didn't like the Kiprusoff one when they first saw it. And then it seemed as if every big ticket guy got a backdive deal contract. And finally the league said enough's enough with Ilya Kovalchuk and they went to arbitration over it, and won. But this is the fumes of a bygone CBA. and Shea Weber's involved in it. And the final few years of the $1 million salary, and that's what is very much in question here. So what does this mean for Montreal then this offseason if there's not going to be a next season for Shea Weber? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's the big question. I think, well, first of all, it clears up some expansion draft, right? Now yes. You're protecting Edmondson, you're protecting Sherratt, and you're protecting Petrie. You don't have to worry about going 4-4 or 7-3-1 and leaving one of those players unprotected. So that's the first thing it does. I think also Montreal, I think, is concerned about losing Jake Allen. I think they've done some searching around to see if there's a way they can avoid that. I mean, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, I think you're all of a sudden now you're looking on your blue line. You know, do they think that they can fill from within, or do they have to go from without? Like, I mean, that's from outside. Like, that's a significant hole that you've got there now. How do you replace that hole? I mean, the other thing you could have, Jeff, is you could use the LTIR relief. I mean, the other player we don't really have a good picture on right now is Jonathan Drouin. And, you know, obviously he's been through a lot, and we've got to see what his situation is going to be. But that's something else that, you know, they're probably trying to figure out what that's going to mean to their whole cap roster puzzle. So I think at the very least, it solves an expansion draft problem. It creates a big hole on your blue line. And, you know, I think Montreal's got to work and figure out what this is all going to mean for their roster.
Elliot, what was your surprise level of the buyouts of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter? And where do you think they end up? Any scoops on where they might be landing?
Well, I wasn't as surprised on Parise. I think, Anthony, I was like most people. I was completely shocked on Suter. I didn't see that coming. You know, I think everybody believes that Parise is going to be an Islander here. We'll see. He'll be looking for fit. I've heard they've taken a ton of that Suter's gotten a ton of calls already. And, you know, I mean, you saw the story, and I heard the same thing that Mike Russo reported, was that he hung up on Bill Guerin. This is a guy who's going to be motivated to do something big. I've heard he wants, I mean, who can predict cup contenders? But I think he wants a team that he believes is in position to contend. And I think he's going to have a lot of offers out there. I've heard that he's going to have some very good options on some very good teams who are reaching out to him saying, what do you think about it?
Yandel out, Suter in.
Where, in Minnesota?
Ooh.
Oh, in Florida. Sorry,
Suter. Yeah.
Yeah, I do think Florida would be one of those teams that would have interest for sure. Like, look, I like Boston, Colorado. You know, I always wonder about a team like Vegas, although they got a lot of D. You know, I mentioned the other day on the podcast, I heard some people saying they wouldn't be surprised if Washington is able to create some room. Like, mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a lot of teams after him. I even think some of the Canadian teams will reach out, but I know a lot of people who know him tell me they'd be surprised if he went that direction.
To Toronto, Zach Hyman talking with other teams. I'm of the belief that he's going to end up going in a 6x6-ish style deal somewhere. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I think that's true. I think the Maple Leafs have long suspected that Hyman is well aware of what the market is for him, and they're just not willing to go there. It sounds like there's a significant gap between what the two sides were looking at. You know, I know a lot of people suspect Edmonton. I know some people suspect Detroit. I mean, who knows who else could potentially be around there, Jeff? But like, I don't like I think agents and teams are smart. Like, it's like technically there's not supposed to be any conversation, but I think people generally happen to know what the markets are going to be, or I think you got to think that if the Toronto and Hyman can't work this out, that both sides think there's something bigger out there for them. And I think at this point in time, you'd be surprised if it didn't happen.
I'm trying to make the math, as they say. I don't get the reports now that they're thinking of you're making some salary available by trading Kerfoot. You have Hyman walk to try to get Landeskog for $8 million. So why wouldn't you rather have a Hyman and a Kerfoot as opposed to trying to land Landeskog, who's technically, I would say, in the same elk of a Hyman as well?
That's good use of the word ilk, Anthony. I like that.
I said elk, by the way. Yeah,
I know, but I'm trying to give it to you, man. I'm trying to make you look good. Here's the thing. Like the thing about Landeskog is, like, to me, Landeskog is at the very least. It depends on how much money's in the system. We'll find out. But like, I look at Anders Lee, who got 7x7. Mm-hmm. Like, do you not think that that's where this guy is going to end up?
For sure.
Like, Landeskog?
Yeah, Landeskog.
Like, seven and a half minimum.
Doesn't it seem like he's holding on to like 9 and all he wants to negotiate his term?
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know that, Jeff, but I'm just saying, look, like, Anders Lee got 7x7. And I know that was pre-pandemic. But to me, that's the, like, if you're Landeskog, that's the bare minimum of what you're looking at, right?
I believe that. I believe. Okay. Yes, that I believe.
So how can Toronto do that?
They can't.
So who's reporting that? Let's call them out. Call them out now.
Anthony, like, I hate to say, I don't want to say no, because maybe Dubas pulls some wild move where they actually can do that. Maybe he decides Landeskog is what he's got to have, and he does do that. I don't know. But I'm looking at this right now and I'm saying, like, if he's not going back to Colorado, it's because he's getting a huge deal somewhere else, whether it's St. Louis or it's in Nashville or wherever it is. Okay. So you know that if Landeskog hits the market, the number is big. How does Toronto make that work?
See, I'm on that side. Like, I believe that St. Louis is going to prepare a whopper for Gabriel Landeskog. And I think we always put too much in, well, his partner's from Markham, he spends his summers here, therefore he must want to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. I don't put much in that at all. I think St. Louis makes an enormous offer, and that'll be the play. Like, it all indications are that is who the St. Louis Blues want if he hits the market. That's their
advice. Well, that's the thing. Like, and he fits the profile of what St. Louis likes, and he just ran over them like 2 months ago, right? Yeah. So I agree with you. I'm sure there's others. I could see a team like Nashville being interested. I could see a lot of people being interested in this guy. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at it from the Toronto point of view. If he gets the market, what's the number? Well, I think at the minimum, it's Anders Lee. It might be more than that. But at the minimum, it's 7x7. So how's Toronto going to do that? Now, I do think Toronto's looking at a situation where they're losing one of Kerfoot or Dermott in the expansion draft.
Trade.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Here it comes, Elliot.
What deal are you making?
I'm not making what no deal. I'm not saying
do
nothing.
It. Do it, Stewie. Do it, Stewie. Say it.
It doesn't work with the big four. Simple as that. It does not work with the big four. And until one of the big four are gone, we're going to be having this conversation until the cows come home. Simple as that.
See, and that's the thing, Sue. Like, I think Dubas wants to do something impactful. I think he absolutely wants to do something impactful. However, I don't know if that impactful thing is Landeskog. It might be, because he's something that they don't have, particularly if they don't keep Hyman. But I'm also wondering, is that in goal? Is it somewhere else on his blue line? Like I said many times, I think he's going out for something he doesn't have. But like, I just simply look at where, like, to me, Landeskog is going to get more than Hyman did, right? So if you can't fit, like, let's just say Hyman gets 6x6, okay? I'll use that. I think Landeskog is going above that. Yes. So if you can't make it work for Hyman, how do you make it work for Landeskog?
Well, you could logically, you could turn around and say, well, hang on a second here. If all of a sudden we have a shot at Landeskog, we're willing to get rid of players slash salary to make that work that we wouldn't be prepared to do to keep someone like Hyman.
Okay, well, maybe
I could understand that logic. I just don't know. I just don't know when you consider that they still need one more goaltender as well. That I don't know how you're going to make that fit if you're fishing for Landeskog. Like, maybe I'm missing something that's really obvious. I just don't know what it is for each.
And the other thing too is, no offense to Landeskog, but you know what Hyman is, and you know how much he loves being part of the team. So I think if you're doing that, you're trying to keep Hyman, don't you think?
Well, who would you, okay, if the money was equal then, and we know it's not, who would you rather have?
I probably,
I would, but the
thing is, like, but I'm also looking at it like, Hyman hasn't, like, I also believe that you reward from within if you can. You have to show the players that who are, you know, you have to show the players that you're going to reward them, that when the UFA comes, that, you know, the people who grew up in your organization, I know technically wasn't drafted by them, Hyman, but you grew up in your organization, you take care of.
Have they not done that, though?
Well, they have, but this would be a, anyway, they have, but like in this particular case, too, like I think Hyman's a big loss. I do. I think he's, yeah. I think he's a huge loss for them. He's from here. He cares a lot about the team. He's a selfless player. Landeskog is all of those things too. But again, he's going to cost you, I think, more than Hyman is. I just don't. I mean, we're going around in circles. I just don't. You know, I don't see how it's going to work.
All right,
that's all.
Let's get out of Leafland here before we let you go. Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton. Which team holds the most intrigue for you, and why?
Well, I think Edmonton's pretty interesting. I mean, they made the one move that was universally cheered, and I think they've got more coming. Like, I think we all wonder if they're in on the Hyman stuff.
Yeah,
and you know,
like the goalie.
If it's not Hyman, maybe it's Armia. I think we're all wondering what they're doing on the blue line here. You know, I thought Larson would be signed. He hasn't been signed yet. We'll see if this is a post-expansion draft thing. There's a lot going on with Edmonton. I think Vancouver, Vancouver, I think, is one of the teams potentially that could have an interest in a guy like a Jaden Schwartz. But I think there's going to be a lot of interest in him. And it's not going to be easy for them to make it work. Calgary with the Giordano and trying to sign Goudreau. I mean, all these teams have interesting things around them, but I think Edmonton is probably the one that's got the most balls in the air. They're deciding Mike Smith 1 year or two, and then they have to go get another goalie too. Is it Georgiev? Is it one of the Vegas guys? Like they were one of the teams that was linked to Columbus's goalies, I just don't know how all this is going to unfold now in Columbus, with all the tough things that they've been through recently. I think Edmonton's got a lot of balls in the air. Like one of my theories, as you know, Jeff, is that one of the reasons they got the Keith deal done was they said, okay, we have certainty here. We've got this done. Now we've got to deal with one last thing to worry about with everything else.
Mm-hmm. Before we let you go, Frege, how does it feel to finally, if you've seen Frege on Instagram, have your ears lowered?
It's a lot cooler, I'll tell you that much. Like, it's not as hot. I know, I put it this way, my family's happy, so
yeah,
that's key. As you know, happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, the memers aren't happy, I'll tell you that.
I got news for you, Andy. I know the memers, they can do anything with anything. It doesn't matter.
Can you just tell, everybody thinks that you get rattled by the Beamers, but you're actually probably one of the best sports when it comes to Beamers, are you not?
No.
He starts them about himself.
That doesn't, no, I don't start them about myself. That's lame. I don't meme myself. No, I love it. I think it's really funny. I do. Like, whenever people take shots about it or something like that, I just, like, I want people to be in on the joke. I think it's hilarious.
It's awesome. I learned last time I got a haircut, I learned what a cut G was. My 9-year-old gave me a big smack. I'm like, what's that? He goes, cut G, Dad. I'm like, okay, finally. All right. That sort of hit me up into the world of young people. And now back to being an old grump. Thanks so much for this, as always, Fareej. Busy days for you. Continued. Hope you're getting some rest through all this. I know this is a bizarre time. Do you feel guilty going to sleep now?
No.
Because anything can happen at any time.
I don't feel guilty going to sleep, but I don't feel like that. But generally, like, if I put my phone down for a couple minutes, there's some anxiety you're going to miss something. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I bet that's true. All right, you're released, Fareej. Thanks, bud.
All right, guys, take care.
There he is, Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. A whole lot of info there. We step away. We get on the Ottawa Senators page as this is a fascinating team now, and not just for the introduction of Pierre Maguire, but expectations are pretty big at the in the nation's capital for next season, but some business to take care of before they get there. Here to help us break it down, Jason York from the NHL on Sportsnet when Hockey Central returns on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to the program. Hockey Central here Monday to Friday at noon. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart. Want to thank Elliot Friedman for stopping by to fill us in on what's happening with the goofy season. That is a number of things, really. And a lot of it sort of winks at the expansion draft, which is why a lot of these moves are getting made. Flat cap as well. But NHL draft's on the horizon. Expansion draft's on the horizon. Free agency's on the horizon. And there are large names that are moving around. Jason York joins us from the NHL on Sportsnet. I want to get into the conversation here about the Ottawa Senators, who have piqued our interest. First of all, York Chap, how are you? Thanks so much for stopping by today.
Hey, Jeff. Good. Yeah, I'm good. So they've piqued your interest, have they, the Ottawa Senators?
Well, why would that okay. Be? So what? I don't. So I'm up on Monday morning. Like, I don't know. I get up like 6:30 and goofing around and do my little workout, and then I open up the Twitter machine, and around 7:30 a.m. from Sens Communication, it's a note about Pierre Maguire joining the Ottawa Senators. Now, we've talked about Pierre and the Sens pretty much all week long, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this one. When you saw the news or heard the news, however you found out about it, what went through your mind?
I actually had a double take, Jeff, because I actually got a text from an old colleague of mine, and it was about Maguire, and I was up at Mont Tremblant at the time, and I'm like, what are you talking about? So I was, I guess, number one, I was shocked. I didn't see this one coming. But the more I think about it, I'm not that surprised, because if you look at the Ottawa Senators, they have arguably the smallest sports ops department of all of professional sports. They are so undermanned, guys. They needed somebody in. And so it's Pierre Maguire. He's been out of the game, an NHL dressing room or a front office since, 1994? That's the one thing that's shocking. But the other thing, he has been inside the game. He's been around it. So I was shocked, but not surprised.
Stewie.
Thanks for joining us. So last year, you know, they went the super veteran route and bringing guys in like Stepin and Gabranson and Coburn, and it didn't really work out. So they have some work to do in rounding out this roster. Do you see them going younger and faster, or sticking to that same formula at the beginning of the season last year?
Stewie, that's a great question. They tried to go with the veteran guys, and you remember they brought Coburn in. They had Stepan and those guys. It was clear right from the start they didn't fit. They can't play with pace, weren't quick enough. And then when they started having success later on in the year, guys, it was because of their younger guys. You look at the Chuck Norris line they called with Norris and Batherson and Brady Tkachuk, and they started playing the young guys and they started having more success. So I would have to think that's the way this team has to go. The one thing I would like to see them do this summer, fellas, is they really need a guy to play with Thomas Chabot. They need a stabilizing force. I look at Zaitsev. he's not a top pairing guy. He really isn't. That would be first and foremost what I'd do with this team. If you're going to bring in an older guy, bring in a good defenseman. Doesn't have to be a star, just somebody that is legitimate top four defenseman that you can slot with Thomas Chabot. Because look at him, guys. He hasn't won anything or done anything. He's played with a bunch of different coaches. And before you know it, like, this guy is going to get used to, I'm not going to say losing, but just you just need that older guy on the back end. I can tell you, as a former defenseman, it is so important to have an older guy around to learn from, to watch. And not even just about the hockey things, too. You know this, just about how to be a pro, how to act. Who has Chabot had, really, to lean on? Like, I'm sure it's not Zaitsev, because you're probably not having conversations. Like, what are they talking about? You know, they've got the Russian guys. They're probably hanging out with each other. And who's the guy? Is it Victor Mete? He's only been in the league for 2 years. So to me, that's something they really need to address.
You know, long term, maybe the answer to that, and again, you don't want to jump them right in with top minutes. That's why you probably just need someone there for a couple of seasons. Probably long term on the right side with Chabot is probably Jacob Bernard-Docker, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. For sure, Jeff. He's going to be the guy. I know DJ Smith loves him. The whole organization loves him. He's a future guy that's probably going to wear a letter back then. He's trending, or he's projecting as one of those shutdown top D, but he's not going to be able to jump in there sure not next year and do that. And the year after is probably, he's going to need some time in the minors. He's going to need some time to develop. It's a huge jump from college. They need a stopgap guy. If they could find an older guy on an expiring contract, you know, you look at Duncan Keith, preferably not a guy that old, but a guy that's kind of on the back end, but still has some fuel in the tank and come in, help the Senators become a better team, but more importantly, help a guy like Chabot.
You know who may have been, just historically, York Chop, who the best at that was, just coming in and helping young D, and especially like elite-level young D, Brad McCrimmon.
He was great, wasn't he?
I remember, like, you would have been in Detroit with him, right?
Jeff, I played with Brad McCrimmon, the beast, and and it wasn't about really the game. It was how to be off the ice. Like, he came in, and he would lead the team in fitness testing. In Detroit back in 1990s, early 90s, our big thing was we had to do a mile-and-a-half run. And here's Brad McCrimmon, who was a big, thick guy. He was called the Beast for a reason. He would win the mile-and-a-half run every single training camp, and that set the standard for the rest of the guys. He was the rabbit that everybody had to catch. Like, that's just leadership right there. Then he'd, after practice, he'd bring me on the ice, and this was before when you know, the front of the net was actually a dirty zone where defensemen could cross-check you. And, like, he'd bring me a second, Yorky, come here. I'm going to teach you how to take guys out in front of the net. He's like, first thing I want you to do, we're going to learn how to chop the top of the laces. And he'd grab the stick, and he'd chop you on the top of the laces. And he'd go, all right, bend down and pretend you're going to screen the goalie. So I'd do it, and he'd take his stick. And he'd do the old one there, Stewie, when the defenseman puts the stick under your butt and kind of lifts you off balance. Then he cross-checks you to the ground. So, like, just guys like that. The sad part for me is it's really tough to find guys like that now, fellas.
Yeah.
They kind of don't exist. They're a little bit of an extinct species. But Detroit had lots of those guys, and Mark Howe was back there as well, Paul Coffey. But Brad McCrimmon, you know, God rest his soul. He was such a great person. He was so good to me. I was only there for a short time, and you know, off the ice, he'd take you out after, and, you know, if you had a few beers, it was like, all right, kid, you had a couple last night. Now we're going to work it off in practice. It was leadership 101 with Brad McCrimmon. It really was.
He was the guy they put Nick Lidstrom with when Lidstrom showed up. It's like, all right, kid, you're with Brad McCrimmon. That's the guy that's going to introduce you to the NHL, right?
Just a wonderful person, guys. And I was blessed to play with a guy.
Yeah, my 1B story was he was the assistant coach for Team Canada at under 18, and I was being one of the loudest guys in the room, and he just came up to me and threw a bag of chips right off my face and be like, Stewie, will you shut up? I was like, okay. Right off my face.
did you eat the chips, too? Did you eat them,
too? No. So I have to be careful around him. But on to Matt Murray. He struggled last year, Matt Murray, and he came back and played some good hockey before getting injured. Do the Senators have faith that he's going to be the guy going forward, or is he exposed and potentially gone to Seattle?
Well, you know, the old thing is the general manager going to admit he made a mistake? And that's a tough part I see in the National Hockey League. And he didn't play well. He hasn't played well for a long time. It would make sense to expose him. But the other thing, and is he really done as a goaltender? It's pretty quick and pretty early to say that. He just got off to a tough start. He never really got it on track. I don't know. If you get rid of him, who's your goaltender in Ottawa right now? Is it Gustafson? Do you go with him? That's a tough call. If it's me, I'm probably giving Murray another shot just because of history. He has played well in the past. He's got the cups. He's got the experience. I can tell you this. He's a great person off the ice, and I think he's going to come back. And for him, I could see him having a bounce back year. So I would think they keep him. And like I said, general managers never want to admit that they did something wrong. So I can't see Dorion exposing him. But then again, with Pierre Maguire now in the fold, how much of a say is Pierre Maguire going to have? Like, it's just so strange, Jeff. Back to your original question, I really don't know. I know they named him director of player development, but I just think that's a title to give him. And you got to wonder, is Pierre Dorion on notice now?
Well, I was wondering. I mean, that was one of the questions that everybody had. Does this mean that the Ottawa Senators have just hired their next general manager?
Well, it's a great question. You go back to this to what happened with Jack Capuano, and there's some friction there, and there's always been rumors off the ice about friction with the coaching staff and Pierre, but it's rumors. But sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. The one thing I will say, they've done a terrific job in Ottawa with their minor league team in Belleville, with drafting, with prospects. So you do have to give Dorion some credit for that. Like, they've done a real nice job of putting together an excellent young talent pool.
They really have. Two things. One, I can see Chris Cherney being the guy that ends up leaving Ottawa in the expansion draft. And number two I can just see it, right? And he's a good, solid hockey player.
I like him. If it's me, you got Dadnoff at $5 million for two more seasons. I think there's, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's a little bit of history in Seattle with Dadnoff. One of their decision makers, I believe, in Seattle is a Dadnoff fan. I called him the best bumper player in the league, I believe. I'm trying to remember who's on their staff. Read that the other day, but I just don't see him as a fit in Ottawa. If I could somehow get him taken in that expansion, that would be the guy. Like, where does he fit in that top six with Ottawa? It's not my top six.
On the right side, you got Batherson, you got Connor Brown, who's just coming off a 21-goal campaign. There's no chance. But Batherson's due a contract, and perhaps more pressingly, so is Brady Tkachuk. If you're Brady Tkachuk, what type of deal are you looking for? And if you're the Ottawa Senators, what type of deal are you looking for here?
Well, the Senators want to get him locked up for the maximum amount of years they can. Was it 8 years or 7 years?
8 years.
The max is, yeah.
Yeah,
so
he can do eight. He can do
eight.
Yeah.
They want to get eight, but I'm trying to think. Is Brady is represented by New Sports, right, Jeff? Newport Sports.
Yes, he's Newport. Correct.
Newport historically, with their young stars, don't like to go long term. They like to have a couple swings at it, and it's with Brady Tkachuk. I don't know this firsthand, but I have to think if he's going to go long term, it's going to have to be a huge number, like a huge astronomical number, which I don't know if the Senators are going to be prepared to do that, which they're going to have to. So if they want him, they're going to want to go long term, but they're going to have to offer him a huge dollar. And where the finances are with the Ottawa Senators right now, it's no secret. I don't know if they're in a position to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, want to end on this one, but it's a follow-up question to Brady Tkachuk. Is he, mind you, everything changes if he doesn't stay, but provided he stays based on the next contract, is he the next captain of the Ottawa Senators?
I'd have to think so. He's the guy that stirs the drink at Ottawa. He's an alpha dog. He walks into a room and he's a guy that everybody takes notice of, the way he plays. DJ Smith, that's the type of player he wants. As long as DJ Smith is the coach of this hockey team, which I don't see any reason why he won't be, he's done a great job. Hey, Jeff, that's a DJ Smith hockey player, isn't it?
100%.
That's and if that's your guy, you want to mold your team, you want to mold as a tough guy to play against, no question he's your future captain.
On that, we'll let you go. Jason, always good catching up, man, and love the stories of Brad McCrimmon. I will listen to Brad McCrimmon stories, York Chop, Stewie, all day long, man.
Love that, man. Day for that love guy. That, yes. Man. Me too, Jeff.
Everyone does. Thanks so much for this, Jason. We'll catch up down the road, pal. You be well.
Anytime. See you, Stewie.
See ya.
There he is, Jason York from the NHL on Sportsnet in the nation's capital, covering off the Ottawa Senators. Some decisions to make there, who's exposed in the expansion draft, and what's the number for Brady Tkachuk and also Drake Batherson. All three players, by the way, on that top line. You throw in Josh Norris coming off 17-goal campaigns, all with 30 points in 56 games, and none of them missed a single game this season. Hit a break. More Hockey Central in moments. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a flash. Okay, real quick, about 90 seconds here, Stewie. Off the top of the show, we mentioned Keith Yandel's buyout. The Florida Panthers, they did add some salary. Gustav Forsling back with the Florida Panthers, and Anthony Duclair re-signs with the squad as well. You'll well recall for his last deal, he represented himself. I don't think Florida was the only team he negotiated with. I believe Nashville was one as well. Bet on himself, the one-year deal. And he's rewarded a 3-year contract with the Florida Panthers, $3 million per season. For Anthony Duclair, $9 million defensively. And this happens with Joel Quenneville players defensively. You get a little shot in the arm, a much better, more complete player. It is a $9 million deal, 3 years for Anthony Duclair with the Florida Panthers, Anthony Stewart.
Yeah, I think it's a good deal, and he's earned that job security after bouncing around. I think it was 4 or 5 different organizations, 32 points last year, and he was up and down, you know, from the first line to third line duties, but he's found a home, and that $3 million, I think that's, what, $7 million in Canadian with the Florida tax bracket they got there, too, so congratulations to him. He definitely earned it.
Sticking your money in your own jeans when you play in places like Florida and Texas and Nashville, like... Say Nevada?
Russia, yeah. Literally.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get it in a paper bag there, as I understand. Yeah. Is that right? And then you have to put it in your hockey pants so it doesn't vanish from the dressing room. Is that right, yep. Anthony Stewart?
Oh, yeah. Mother Russia. Gotta love it.
Matthew DeFranks, by the way, reporting Ben Bishop has agreed to waive his no-movement clause for the Seattle expansion draft. So some more intrigue. There, teams getting business done. Happy to document it for you and with you here on Hockey Central. Smith and Jones is next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Have a great afternoon.